somewhere I read, of the freedom of speech.
Et qui défendait la liberté d'expression.
The moment you limit free speech, it's not free speech.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Welcome to Clear and Present Danger, a history of free speech, by Jakub Mshangama.
Clear and Present Danger relies on the generous support of FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, Fridor, and the Politiken Foundation.
Welcome to the second COVID-19 special edition of Clear and Present Danger, which once again focuses on the here and now rather than the past. Last special episode featured a discussion with Facebook VP Monica Bickert on how a private social media platform like Facebook handles content moderation during a pandemic accompanied by an infodemic. Today, we'll be mostly discussing how states have responded when it comes to freedom of expression and access to information.
Since the coronavirus became a pandemic, governments around the world have adopted a wide range of measures affecting basic human rights. This includes many of the 47 member states of the Council of Europe, all of whom are legally bound by the European Convention on Human Rights. Most states have limited the freedoms of assembly and movement. Some have also limited privacy and data protection, and then there are some who have restricted freedom of expression through laws or policies banning false information. With me to discuss the implications for freedom of expression is none other than the Council of Europe Commissioner for Human Rights, Dunja Mijatović, who previously served as the OSCE representative on freedom of the media. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Dunja.
Thanks for having me.
You released a statement of April 3rd where you acknowledged that the global health problems caused by COVID-19 require effective measures to protect people's health and lives. This includes combating disinformation that may cause panic and social unrest. But then you also warned that some governments are using this imperative as a pretext to introduce disproportionate restrictions to press freedom. This is a counterproductive approach that must stop, particularly in a time of crisis. And you've highlighted measures in countries like Hungary, Romania, Russia, and Azerbaijan. How bad would you say the situation has become for free expression in Europe as a consequence of corona-related restrictions?
In the past weeks, or even I can say in the past 2 months, parliaments, governments, and different levels of authorities in member states of the Council of Europe, but also beyond, have adopted legislation, certain decrees, and they made decisions that clearly risk hampering the work of journalists and media actors, and also restricting the public's right to receive information, which I think is also extremely affected during this pandemic. I would say that the global health problems caused by COVID-19 require effective measures to protect people's health and lives. However, the health imperative must not become a carte blanche to destroy other rights, including freedom of expression, but also privacy. And it is necessary that these technologies, also digital health technologies, be counterbalanced by respect for privacy. So it is not just freedom of expression. There are many other rights that are clearly affected during this crisis, that unprecedented, I would say, health crisis that the world is encountering. But this is not a new thing when it comes to free speech, I would say. Well before this pandemic, we were seeing a global assault on freedom of expression. Around the world, governments were stretching the meanings of what is permitted, what is not permitted, and then the way they were defining emergency and national security in broad, vague ways, making it almost impossible for people, for individuals, to know what speech or opinions are allowed. So now, particularly in the countries that are notoriously known for restriction of free speech, we are facing even greater problems. And we are also seeing this happening, particularly in digital space, with restrictions on the media, and also with the attacks against civil society and organizations.
I completely agree with you that this is not a novel development. This is just, you could say, something that has a climax, if you want, of a more than a decade long development. But if we zoom in on COVID-19 related restrictions, what types of restrictions do you see as particularly worrying coming out of states at the moment?
I would like to mention, emergency decrees with no deadlines, with no really transparent ways of showing to the population what exactly they are aiming at, what the governments are aiming at. I mentioned several countries in my statements, but the situation is changing as we speak. There are new developments and there are new attempts of the governments to address the issue of health emergencies. It is also important to try at least to understand what is behind it. Is it really, something that is done in good faith in order to protect people, or there is something more underneath the carpet, if I may say so? If the aim is to further restrict dissenting voices, differing opinions, and also to restrict the role of the civil society in the countries. You mentioned several countries that I really mentioned in my statement, which was almost a month ago. But as I said, the situation is changing, and my team and I are closely following all the developments in member states of the Council of Europe. And we are trying also to see which kind of measures are clearly presenting human rights violations. Nowadays, it's, I would say, too early to make a professional assessment, but still what is important really is to collect data and to follow certain legislative processes, but also bylaws that are introduced in several countries. In addition to legislation, I would say continuous attacks on journalists, in some states even arrests, charges are pressed on journalists that are trying to report about failures of the government to fight COVID in many states. And then again, I would also mention access to truthful, reliable information and the role of public service broadcasting that is now really proving to be essential. And we can see that in many states, one additional problem is lack of genuine, trustful, independent public service broadcasting that can provide information to population.
Let's try to get more specific and some of the countries. You mentioned Hungary, Romania, and Russia. What are the measures here that you find particularly worrying when it comes to freedom of expression and access to information?
Journalists, according to the latest information I have, that is that the journalists covering the pandemic in Hungary and in Russian Federation are facing a variety of sanctions, including the risk of prison terms up to 5 years for spreading false information. Azerbaijan, recent amendments to impose obligation on owners of internet news outlets to prevent the dissemination of harmful information online. Then we also have information that in Romania, a decree allows the authorities to remove content and block websites where this content provides false information. And it is, really big question mark how it is done. Is it done, in a transparent way? Are there safeguards in place? And all these other issues that are not new for free speech advocates in order to see if something is committed or not and what is the reasoning behind it. In Bosnia and Herzegovina, decrees and legislative proposals aimed at punishing the circulation of information that can cause panic run the risk of limiting investigating the work of journalists and freedom of expression on social media platforms. And there are many other examples of this kind of decrees and measures that are introduced. I would mention also Czech Republic, Serbia. There were reports of cases of journalists who were prevented from attending press conferences, obtaining information from health authorities, which is a widespread problem, or documenting the operations of law enforcement officials. These are just a few examples, but as I stated already, there are information circulating constantly, and we are receiving it on further attempts. In Bulgaria, for example, concerns about the recent attempt to pass a law introducing harsh sentences for spreading misinformation. And then, of course, the issue of the fact that misinformation or so-called fake news is something that the governments are aiming at, we can ask many questions in relation to this. Is this really necessary? Is it something that can incite violence? And is it something that can really affect safety and security of people?
This is, you're obviously, you're the Human Rights Commissioner in the Council of Europe, but four of those states that you mentioned, Bulgaria, the Czech Republic, Romania, and Hungary, are also members of the European Union, which of course is supposed to be particularly vigilant about democracy and fundamental freedoms. So is this indicative of how much of a crisis this is, that even member states of the European Union are severely restricting free expression in a manner that may not be compatible with the human rights standards? And we can get back to that particular question.
Well, on this, first of all, I would say that, of course, I would expect from the EU member states to show more vigilance and more respect for human rights, even in times of crisis. But unfortunately, the situation that in many of the states that I mentioned, but also did not mention, the situation with free speech was already in a very problematic situation even before COVID-19. We mentioned Hungary, we can talk about Poland, we can talk about Romania, Bulgaria. There are numerous reports that I issued last and this year after my visits and after free speech was one of the topics I tried to cover during those country visits, where it is clearly visible that free speech, safety of journalists, and the media freedom situation in general is in a very problematic situation. So COVID-19 is not the only reason. It goes well back in previous period where several states, EU, but also non-EU member states, were not really up to standards, human rights standards and obligations.
So let's talk about standards, because if you were the government of Hungary or Romania or the Czech Republic, Bulgaria, you might say, Dunja, acknowledge that combating disinformation is vital during this crisis. Article 10, paragraph 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights allows governments to interfere with free expression for the purpose of, quote, public safety and, quote, the protection of health. So surely in an exceptional circumstance like this, governments have legitimate concerns, and one of them is to protect their populations from false information that might lead them to adopt behavior that could lead to ultimately them dying or them spreading the virus even further, with devastating consequences for health and the economy and so on.
I would say that to combat disinformation never prevent journalists and media actors from carrying out their work or lead to content being unduly blocked on the internet. in crisis or not, those countries which have introduced restrictions that do not meet these standards must repeal them as a matter of urgency. And of course, we need to make sure that information is reliable and that information is truthful and that people can access those information. But if the government is controlling flow of information, then we have even greater problem. At a time when information and transparency are necessary to combat this pandemic, it is also vital that the government-led censorship be identified, exposed, but also rejected. And I think it is also important to mention that any kind of censorship can create greater problems later on. If the governments really do not respect their obligations and legal boundaries, they are also risking to endanger our system of human rights protection in general. And they also risk losing public trust and support, which is also indispensable feature in state efforts to protect people's lives and health. So how to strike the balance and how to make sure that people are receiving accurate information, but that they can also choose different ways of accessing those information is also crucial. Nevertheless, we also have to be very realistic and recognize that currently conspiracy theories, information about health, about COVID, on how to fight it, is circulating around the world and is affecting people's life as well. This is also a great test for democratic governments in order to find the right way and to strike the right balance and show what does it mean to be a responsible government really taking care of people's well-being. It is not an easy task, but at the same time, I think it also can bring more when it comes to recognizing the importance of democratic government. I do not think that democracies need to sacrifice our right to freedom of expression and privacy and many other rights in order to protect our health. I think health and freedom of expression, but also I would add data protection, are part and parcel of a life lived in dignity and security. And the governments can and must find the right balance between these two pressing imperatives. And this would be my answer to those governments that would disagree with me. And I can assure you that there are many disagreeing. And we need to also see that they can ensure that the technology also works for and not against human rights, democracy, and the rule of law.
So basically, you're saying that, yes, you acknowledge that there might be conspiracy theories out there, people who claim, you know, bogus treatments that might actually endanger people's lives, people who say specific groups may be responsible for the COVID virus. But your answer is that censorship is the wrong cure, or that it may be even worse than the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I think that free media is always essential, and during this crisis period, we are even more depending on reliable information, on reporters bringing stories that can really reveal wrongdoings of the governments also during crisis. We should not allow situations or atmosphere where this kind of information is hidden in the name of so-called security, national security, or emergency. Credible, truthful reporting is a lifeline for people. And I think it is also important to mention that nowadays many journalists that are engaging in this kind of reporting are very openly attacked by many leaders and many governments, and they are creating additionally hostile situations for their safety. And I think it would be extremely important that there is a healthy debate in the States and not the debate that is restricted. And that is why I think, you know, this false narrative that there is a need for restrictions in order to protect people is something that I would strongly disagree with. There are ways to fight misinformation and fake news. There are also legal possibilities to engage in this, but at the same time, I think it is important to find the right way and to see very clearly. That is why I think the role of international organizations, including my own office, is crucial in this period in order to work with the NGOs, civil society members, but also institutions that are providing information of restrictions that might affect rights of people.
You know, some might say, yes, it's extremely important to have reliable, credible information to protect press freedom. But online, that is where you have the cesspool of disinformation, you know, both by state actors. There was recently a story about how China may have pressured the EU to sort of tone down the role of Chinese disinformation, which is otherwise well documented, I believe. But also just from all kinds of people with agendas. So could one approach be to say, would you say it is equally important to protect online freedom as press freedom, or would you say, you know, states have a wider margin of appreciation to speak sort of legalese in order to combat disinformation online from non-credible sources, but have very little margin of appreciation when it comes to established media? Or do you see an equally important need to protect online information from social media accounts of your average person as stories from The Guardian or The New York Times?
Important. I think it's absolutely crucial, particularly nowadays. We are now experiencing really a clear way on engaging in cyberspace more than ever before, because of restrictions of the movement and because of pandemic. We are now really in a test phase in order to see how we can function in this kind of environment that is in a way now more imposed to us than ever before. And when it comes to restrictions online, we are all aware that companies like Facebook and Google and YouTube, they responded by applying so-called anti-fake news strategies that seems as if they would be effective. I think, you know, as a public relation move, this can be called very clever move. So they are demonstrating that they are willing. But I'm very much against, you know, this shifting the responsibilities of the states towards the companies. And, you know, if this strategy of companies is sounding like a reasonable and they are making some progress in their fight against misinformation and fake news or incitement, I think based on research by many scholars, suggested that these tactics may be ineffective, and it can make things even worse, leading to confusion, not clarity about the truth, but clear censorship as well. And when it comes to this, I'm still for the courts looking into this and states showing the responsibilities and not shifting the responsibilities towards platforms.
That's very interesting because I did an interview with Monica Bickert, who's the vice president at Facebook and who's responsible for global policy, and she explained to me Facebook's approach, and she admitted that they have removed more information for disinformation and downgraded more than they normally would. And she said that they basically rely on health authorities like the WHO, like the CDC in the United States and others, so their conclusions and guidelines serve as the basis of their determination of what is disinformation. And if you put out, if you post stuff that, you know, may run counter to the guidelines of the WHO, they may then determine that that is in risk of causing imminent physical harm, and they will remove it or downgrade it. So you're saying that approach is problematic because at the same time Facebook says that they are, even though they're not bound by human rights standards, they say they're guided by human rights standards.
Maybe that there are certain cases that they were successful in really targeting the obvious problem or you know, information that might cause imminent harm. But I think at this stage, I would be very skeptical to say this is a successful way of doing it. I think that social media companies need to empirically investigate whether the concerns raised in these experiments, I would call them experiments, are relevant to how their users are processing information on their platforms. There are also many examples of wrong things done. You know, people restricted or their texts and opinions taken from their Facebook posts, if we talk about Facebook, without any really relevant reason. So in times of crisis, we should also be careful that this is not seen as the right way of dealing with the potentially problematic content online. But the time will tell, even though I think it's a very shaky way of dealing with information, and it can long-term cause real and clear censorship.
This is also interesting because I think this speaks to the larger problem of what you identified in the beginning, that for more than a decade, free speech has been in decline across the globe, including in European democracies. So is there an argument that, you know, the classic liberal European democracies have weakened the immune system of free speech by constantly pushing and adopting new laws against hate speech, terrorism, and disinformation? I'm thinking about, for instance, the German law, the NetzDG, adopted in 2018, which requires Facebook and others to remove so-called illegal content. I'm talking about the European Commission, which I think as late as October 2019 also demanded that social media companies do more to remove disinformation. So if you have the leading democracies of Europe demanding more online restrictions, doesn't that pave the way for the kinds of restrictions that, you know, Hungary, Russia, Czech Republic, and others have adopted now?
I would agree. I would say yes, without going into too many details. But I think what is important is to see what free speech advocates around the world are saying. We can also look each and every year at the joint declaration that is done by different organizations, looking at the status of free speech around the world. And here I'm talking about joint declaration that is adopted every year by the OSCE, UN Rapporteur of Free Expression, African, and then American states rapporteurs on free speech, where we can see a decline in a real understanding and respect of free speech around the world. And at this stage, you know, it would be very difficult for me to say in which direction are we moving. But what I can say for sure is that we need to be even more careful in following what certain states, democratic or not, are doing in order to protect societies, as they say. So I think that nowadays security measures or emergency measures, to add emergency measures because of COVID, are now the biggest threat to free speech globally. And in this period, we also have to be very careful on what democracies are doing. I mean, normally, you know, if you ask me some 5-6 years ago, I would say they need to lead by example. I'm also talking about my 7 years as the OSCE representative on freedom of the media, where I looked at democracies in order really to talk to the countries that were at least moving towards democracy or actually thinking in creating more modern and liberal societies. But nowadays, I would say that equally important is to follow what is happening in democratic states, no matter how mature democracies they are. Because sometimes what I hear from many states is like, why are you looking at us? Because we are a democratic society, we have free elections, and we have all these wonderful laws and wonderful words on papers. But when it comes to real world, and when it comes to reality and what is happening to journalists and media outlets, then we need to take even, you know, more deeper look in order to really recognize that there are threats all over.
Dunya, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. I want to let you get back to fighting for basic human rights protections in a time of crisis. I think that is very much needed. But thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Jacob. Always a pleasure talking to you.